Following an uncharacteristically warm weekend in Scotland, who's top of the hill and who's getting in the way at the bottom of the hill? This is the Knock Hill Review.
Hello and welcome back to the British Touring Car Podcast. Yes, we are back once again to take you through all the action from the Knock Hill weekend. We had a weekend on the sofa watching all the action unfold, and it was quite a good weekend of racing, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a weird one because it was action-packed and it wasn't action-packed. It kept threatening to boil over and to really kick off. And we saw some really good battles, particularly in the midfield, but it never quite bubbled into classic touring car territory of, you know, cars flying, you know, left, right and centre. But it was a good weekend of racing, I agree.
No, you're right. Most of the action did occur in...
Sorry, you just said I'm right. Wow.
It did occur in the midfield. It was very much once the drivers got out the front, they kind of went off and won the races quite easily. But that battle sort of like from anywhere from 6th down to 15th, it was anyone's really, wasn't
it? Yeah, and I have to say, Toker have listened maybe to us drivers, fans, and the tyre offset this weekend wasn't anywhere near as bad as the soft to the hard. Who knew? And drivers on the medium could still compete. Obviously, we did see one driver in particular fall back through the field, but I do wonder if that was all setup related, then, because it was the only one of the ones that did in that. So, but we'll get to all of that, of course. But yeah, no, a good weekend of racing.
Okay, then, shall we start off with the qualifying on Saturday?
Yeah, qualifying on Saturday wasn't particularly exciting. Not a lot happened, so I'll just quickly run through sort of the main bits of pieces. So in the first session, De Leon, Rainford, Camish, Proctor, Sutton and Osborne all went through. Good effort by Osborne to get through that pack. Although what I would say on the background of that is that people went out was Dorling, Patterson, Halstead, Lloyd and Chilton, which was a surprise.
Chilton was a surprise, and I think he made quite a few setup changes between the Saturday and the Sunday, because his pace that he showed on the Sunday, especially from race two onwards, was actually quite good.
Yep, in the second session we saw Ingram, Rowbottom, Moffat, Hill, Aaron Taylor-Smith and Smiley all progress. Out went Shedden, Dobble, who did have a spin in this session, thankfully kept it out of the barrier, but did dip it. It's very similar to what he did at Croft. He dipped a wheel where he shouldn't be dipping a wheel and the car spun around, but thankfully no other problems other than potentially needing a new overall when he got back to the garage. Hamilton, Buxton and Morgan also in that session. So two Hyundais out in the first session, which was a bit of a surprise.
Quite surprising. As we were going into the weekend, we thought, okay, it's probably going to be a Napa Ford versus Virtue Hyundai battle this weekend. And the BMWs came up with a bit of a surprise, didn't they?
I mean, it was a bit of a surprise to some people, but not to me. I did in the preview say that I thought this would be a track they would come back stronger, and they did. They did indeed. The second part, getting to the quick six, saw De Leon, Hill, Proctor, Ingram, Rainford and Rowbottom make it through. So that's three of the four BMWs went through. Out went Camish, Moffat, Aaron Taylor-Smith, Smiley, Osborne and Sutton, who nearly rolled the car. He did say afterwards that he was pushing the envelope as hard as he could to try and get into that Super 6, or whatever you want to call it, shootout. And in doing so, he really went hard through the Duffer's dip up onto the two wheels. I think Jade Edwards said on Sunday he was on two wheels for 70 metres before he came back down. Oh, sorry.
It was a long distance and he was very lucky that by the time the car was coming back on its way down, he was just about to enter the gravel. So I think if he was just still up at that sort of angle and it had dug in, who knows what could have happened.
And then in the Super 6, Rainford topped the times. His first pole in his touring car career.
In his career.
Yeah, that's actually true. Yeah,
which is amazing.
You're right, actually. Yeah, in all sport. Yeah, that did shock me as well, because he was a quick lad in the Porsches. But yeah, you're absolutely right. His first pole in any motorsport, so that's grand. De Leon came second, so a BMW 1-2, and that's actually 1-2-3, because Hill was third. And to be honest, once they'd set their early laps, obviously they don't come in for the tyre cross, nobody was getting close to them. The track sort of decelerated really quickly, so after the opening sort of 4 or 5 minutes of that session, yellow started coming out across the board, not flags, second times. And nobody was able to really improve. Rowbottom did manage to get ahead of Ingram and Proctor in sixth. However, post qualifying, Daniel Rowbottom was disqualified for failing the weight check.
Yeah. And not by just like 100 grams or something like that. It was 2.5 kilos that he failed it by.
This stunned me, because we've seen in Formula One, and I sometimes do bring that up, but for sort of Vettel failed by being like, was it something daft over under in Hungary, or having millimetre too few fuel a few, blimey, that's hard to say.
Yeah, I haven't been drinking yet either.
No, but to see 2.5 kilograms, that is, you know, that's a lot of...
Yeah, I think his little social media post on Saturday evening said, they run the risk of being right on the limit, but for me...
That's not the limit.
That's already running possibly under the limit, yeah. And trying to get away with it almost.
Yeah,
it is normally only the top three that get tested. It was just, I think, a case of that Robottoms was spot tested.
Which, as you say, you know, if they're a couple of grams over, you feel sorry for them because you could say, oh, tyre wear and that kind of stuff. Yeah, but 2.5 kilos, that's a lot to be under by. So, yep, put to the back of the grid for race number one, which we'll get into now.
Yeah, so race one on Sunday then, and six drivers started race one on the soft tyre. We saw soft and medium this weekend, and a lot of people wanting to get that medium done out of the way so they could run the soft for the rest of the weekend, knowing that the gap between the tyre offset was only about 3 to 4 tenths.
Yeah, are you slightly surprised that the BMWs opted for the soft in race one, given, I mean, obviously they don't know until, no. You know, you don't know in advance of what else anyone else is running, and once you've elected that, you can't then change when you see what's on the grid, unless wet weather comes into play. But I'm slightly surprised that the BMWs didn't go on medium for the first race. So bear in mind that the three of them could work together. They were going to get a good start, guaranteed, because the way the rear wheel drive cars get off the line. And also the fact they dominated in qualifying as well. I'm a little bit surprised. And also the three of them at the front, I'm surprised maybe one of them didn't split the strategy and go to medium, perhaps.
Yeah.
Because obviously, if they ran the medium in race one, as I'm sure we'll get to, and they finished on the podium, that's it. They don't have to run it again. They can still run the soft in race two and capitalise from there.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, Hill, Rainford and Leon all were running the soft tyre, along with Proctor from fifth, and then also Osborne and Patterson, who were much further down into the pack. That surprised me a bit more, the fact that Osborne and Patterson were going to run them from where they were.
Yeah, it also surprised me that Proctor, from where he was, decided to run it as well. You know, again, because he would know what Ingram is going on. Obviously, you know what your teammates are going to be going on. And I'm slightly surprised that they didn't, because Ingram needed to push forward and make sure he finished ahead of Ash, I'm surprised they didn't stick strategy together so they could... Proctor could basically help Ingram through.
I kind of think they wanted Proctor on a soft to try and go and mix it with the BMWs.
Possibly.
Cause a little bit of havoc. And then Ingram was there getting the medium tyre out of the way, finishing as high up as possible to make the most of the rest of the weekend, which he kind of then went on and did. Mm-hmm. As you expect, BMW got an excellent launch. Moffitt, even on that medium tyre, got a really nice launch and went around the outside of a couple of drivers off the line. And Robottom was actually up 6 positions by the end of lap one, having obviously started from the back for being disqualified for the underweight car. Proctor then got through on Ingram by lap 3 down at the hairpin.
Yep, good move.
I'm surprised this didn't happen a little bit earlier.
It's tricky because...
The BMWs had already made a decent lead at this point.
It's tricky because the problem with Lockhart is it is so short and fast that there's not many obvious places to get out of the way. The hairpin is one of them. But of course, if you go too wide, and we saw this a couple of times with people coming through, someone will nip up behind you and you get shuffled out even further.
Or you can just put the brakes on going across the line.
Subject to flags.
All three BMWs were bumper to bumper at the front, and they were running fairly clear, as we were going to expect, being on that soft tyre, as dominant as they were in qualifying. We kind of knew that at that point they would go off up the road. It was just how they were going to play together and how that would all filter out. Ingram managed to get a track limits warning very early on, having used up his 3 strikes, I think it is, having a black and white flag on only lap 7. So he was going to have to be careful for the rest of the race. And to be fair to him, he did. But it's very early to use up your lives, isn't it?
It is, but I guess that's the failsafe for the drivers. You know you can basically get away with it 3 times, so push the envelope until you can't push it any further. And I think he also said that they put cameras up there for this weekend at Knockhill in turn 2, which weren't there last year. And as he said, his own words, when you're a bit stupid like him, his own words, not mine, that he couldn't remember that they were there and had to sort of relearn that corner to not keep, falling foul of the limits.
And then the first major sort of like overtaking manoeuvre came, and that was De Leon's lunge into T1.
I'm not sure you can count it as an overtaking manoeuvre because he did go cross-country rally style. I have to say...
Have you seen the little bit that's been put on Google Maps today?
Yeah, the De Leon grass cutting services. I have to say, if I was Dick Bennett, I'd be quite annoyed of De Leon at this point, because it's a very clumsy move. And I would argue the move is never on. And if it is on, it's certainly on if that's your teammate.
No. I mean,
if you're racing, if that's Ingram in front of you, for argument's sake, I still don't think it's on, but I can understand it more. But that's your teammate.
What gets it for me is the distance that he then went off by, obviously down Duffers, across the grass, got a load of grass in the front of the radiator.
Yeah, so let's just rewind.
And then had to be really careful with coming back on with the other two teammates around him.
Yeah, so let's just rewind it slightly. So coming into turn one, the line is that you basically cut into the pit exit, and then you, similar to Donington Park, you cut into the pit exit and sweep round. De Leon decided to stay on the inside, but very late decided he was going to lunge in on the brakes. As I say, as you're turning, sweeping, it's a sweeping round corner, if that makes sense, and it's a drop down at the same time. And yeah, he basically, he dived through, and to quote Martin Brundle, was a day late and a dollar short, wasn't it? And just, as you say, then careered across the grass and just filled up the car with dust and dirt.
Yeah, filled the front of the radiator up, and then continued out front as well for a couple of laps. Didn't really give it back straight away, which we thought, he's got to give this back, surely.
Yeah, I wonder if he thought, could he run it in clear air for the rest of the race and then right at the end swap it back, maybe? Because obviously his problem is going to be if he drops back into the pack and he can't get clean air through the car, well, he's going to overheat even quicker.
He was going to struggle to get clean air through the car anyway with the amount of grass that he picked up.
But he can't see that, definitely. Can he? He can't see the amount of grass in it. So maybe he thinks, okay, we'll get it to the end and right on the end we'll swap back and save a steward's inquiry.
Yeah, a couple of laps later, he did let both of them, that's Rainford and Hill, through at the hairpin.
Yeah.
And we thought, okay, right, he's seen sense, but he did gradually start to drop off the pace because he was trying to manage temperatures.
Yeah, I think it would become clear to him at that point that he couldn't nurse it, and there was probably more in there than... I mean, to be fair, last weekend he saw his teammate succeed with a cone in there, so maybe he felt he could get away with a little bit of grass in the radiator, but it wasn't a little bit of grass. It was every single part that should be clear was not clear.
Yeah, and it wasn't long until Proctor then followed through. And yeah, his demise through the field started to happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Osborne was looking really racy on that soft tyre as well in the midfield. He was battling with lots of different drivers, making some interesting moves and some less interesting moves.
I don't think he did a lot wrong this. He was very racy this weekend. He looked, for the first time ever, arguably, really at home in the car and able to put it to the edge of his abilities and the car's abilities. I don't think it'd be a harsh thing to say that perhaps, certainly from the outside, it doesn't look like he's got the best out of that car at times in his Napa career.
But I feel
this
like
weekend it felt he was a lot closer.
I feel like in race one, because he had that tyre differential, and yes, it's not too much between the soft and the medium, but I feel like he should have made a little bit more of it. And when he completed a couple of moves and then dropped back.
I agree, though. I think the tyre offset only really came into its own when you're out front, because we saw throughout the weekend a lot of the tyre offset just struggling to get through the midfield. Yeah. But it's a tight circuit. It's relentless. I remember we watched the onboard of Robotham from the start, and you blink and you're already at the hairpin.
Yeah,
it is such a quick lap that I know what you're saying. I completely get where you're coming from, but I also think here, it's just not as obvious as a place. There's no real long straight just to drive past them on, as it were.
Hill then took the lead on lap 14 down at the hairpin with a fairly comfortable move on Rainford.
Yeah, he locked up initially.
Yeah.
But then was able to get the car back under control and sweep through on the inside.
Both of them were quite sensible with giving each other space as
And Hill out-dragged him on the start-finish line, potentially a boost allocation at play. I'm not quite sure. But it was a... That is how to pass a teammate in a sensible manner, shall we say.
And then Aaron Taylor-Smith and Osborne were clashing doors, with Osborne going up on two wheels through the chicane over the hill, which was a little bit risky.
It was. I don't quite know at what point it happened, but Taylor-Smith did get a penalty or a reprimand after the race for more changing direction under defending more than once, which... I know it's a rule in F1.
I think he did it down into turn one, down the first pit straight, basically.
But I've never seen that in touring.
No.
I assumed it was a rule because it makes sense that in motorsport you can only have one change of direction when defending. But I've never seen that penalty applied in touring cars before.
It's very much similar to moving in the braking zone as well. I think because these cars can be unstabilized in the braking zone, they let a lot more go. But... yeah, this is the first instant that we've seen of it.
I should also quickly point out to Taylor Smith that he was deducted 5 points for coming into this weekend for an engine change. I suppose I could have covered that penalty corner, but sometimes
I forget. Trying to get as many engines out of that Toyota as possible.
Maybe put two in there.
Robotton then was out of boost by lap 17 and really stopped making progress.
Yeah.
He was making good progress up till then. And he, too, was looking racy. We knew he had the pace from qualifying in Saturday. And it really stunted him once he'd used up all of his boost. Possibly tyre.
Again, yeah, I think this just plays into what I was saying before, that it is a tough place to overtake. There's lots of chances to overtake, but because it's so narrow and you start getting three or four cars in a battle pack, as Alison would say, it is difficult to get that space to come through. And while those four are fighting, the next pack are getting further away down the road. You clear that, and suddenly you've then got to catch the next pack.
Or you're getting people behind you catch you up.
Exactly,
and then you've got to think about defending.
You get a lot of field spread at Knockhill.
Yes, you do. And then we saw De Leon's demise through the field. Ingram got him on lap 17, followed by Camish, followed by Moffitt. And it was a real sign of how much the car was struggling to keep hold of the temperatures and almost protect the car at that point. And then we saw possibly the most controversial part of race one.
This has really caused an argument on social media for what happened afterwards, and I don't understand it. So we'll talk about the incident first.
So Hill coming round in the lead, following Halstead round for about a lap or so, he said afterwards, flashing his lights, letting him know that he was on his way. Halstead would, of course, get blue flags as Hill got closer and closer.
And again, not just blue flags from the marshals, they appear on the steering wheel or dashboard as well.
And going through T1 down Duffer's Dip into T2, it's almost like Halstead didn't realise either how quick Hill had caught him through that section, or didn't make a decision as to which side to go safe and allow Hill to go through. And the two of them actually made contact at the bottom of the hill, which consequently then put Halstead into a spin and travelling backwards towards turn three, where luckily Hill and Rainford managed to go around the outside of him. He was able to control the car well enough to stop any further collision.
The
car rolled back into the edge of the gravel.
I think you're being kind. I think the car was dead at that point, personally. I don't think.
And he wasn't able to get the car back out of the gravel, even though the front wheels of that Cupra were on the kerb or tarmac. It's poor.
Look, he's going to know that he's made a big error of this. There's no doubt about it. And the only mitigation I could put in for him is that the Cupra is right-hand drive and the Astra is left-hand drive. So he's got to relearn all his bearings. However, and I could already feel people shouting at me, so let me just take it back a little bit. That's not an excuse. No. You're at the premiere of racing, or Tin Top Racing. You're an experienced driver as well. It's poor. It's indefensible.
It's also fair to say that Hill didn't mince his words in the interview after the race, and I don't actually think he got too much wrong.
No, a lot of
obviously
people,
we haven't heard Halstead's side of it.
No, a lot of people have sort of said that Hill's out of order with sort of the comments he made post race. I haven't got them here, so I can't say them verbatim. But it's basically that he should do better, and I don't think he's wrong. Also, you've got to remember, Hill's just got out of a car. Adrenaline's absolutely pumping around his veins. Yes. He's been driving 100 mile an hour plus for the last half an hour. He's been unwell. Yes. And then he's almost had a race taken away from him in a season where he's not had a great deal of race wins and he's not been particularly competitive. And if the car dies on you, it's part of motorsport, but to potentially have a race win taken off for you or compromised because somebody can't follow the rules of basic rules that you're taught in karting or any form of young motorsport as you're growing up, I can understand why he was cross. And I agree with him. It was poor, and you've got to do better. You've got to do better.
As a result of Halstead not being able to get the car back out of gravel, safety car was called, which De Leon was cheering for at this point, I think. Being able to cool the car down under safety car, we had three laps of safety car.
Yeah, you made the point when we were watching. Difficult one for De Leon. Does he pit under the safety car and clear it and try and get back on the back of the pack? But the problem is, a pit stop and Knockhill, you can lose two laps so quickly under the safety car.
You can. It helps that it would have only been like a quick sweep out the front radiator and then get going again, which if you get the timing right, you get lucky with it, then you might be able to do and only lose a few positions.
But equally, behind the safety car, you can cool effing down. You can take the revs off completely and just sort of lift and coast for the most part and just cool effing down that way. So I think he made the right decision staying out personally.
Yeah, I mean, it was only Sutton that got further past him on the restart.
Which could have happened.
Exactly. And he didn't fall any further back than that. Upon the restart, Hamilton managed to break a front track rod end. Looked like he clipped the barrier at the chicane, the red cell barrier. And yeah, the wheel was wobbling.
It made its a terrific
way,
noise.
Wobbling its way down the road with one lap to go, basically.
It sounded like a disgraced Australian musician playing a didgeridoo.
Okay.
I think he was Australian.
But what I would... We'll move on, mate. What I would say is that the battle from 9th to 15th was constantly chopping and changing in, towards the end of that race. And it would always be a different driver coming around in a different position each lap, which is exactly what we want to see in the touring cars.
Absolutely.
Proctor then let Ingram through over the line. That's a brakes issue or something
I'm
like that.
I'm stunned by this.
Are you?
Only
I can completely understand why they've done it.
I completely understand why they've done it, but I'm stunned by it insofar as that then meant Proctor had to run the hard tyre, I say the hard tyre.
Medium.
Yeah, the option tyre in race two. Whereas
three.
In two.
Sorry, two, yes.
Yeah. By finishing on the post.
Yes. No, the other way around.
Yeah, you're right, yeah.
So, Ingram had run the medium in race one and finished on the podium, he would then run the soft race two, along with Proctor running the soft for race two, because he would have that option, and then he would have to run that in the final race.
Yeah, I can't remember. Well, I'm stunned now. No, you're right. I've got my tyres mixed up. You're absolutely right. So, no, you're right. It wasn't a particularly strange decision. It's one I don't like. I don't like team orders. I don't like this sort of, but it's the games and it's how it goes.
And it's the driver that's in the title hunt. He knows where he stands within the team.
Yeah, yeah.
And he wants to be back next year and he's got to do these kind of things.
I'm not going to...
We've seen it from Robotton before. We've seen it from Kamish this weekend as well.
Yeah.
Through gritted teeth, I'm pretty sure.
Same for Proctor. I don't like it, but I'm not going to cry about it and say it's cheating or anything like that, because it's not. I don't like team orders per se, but it's part and parcel of the game.
So to finalise the running order from race one, they finished Hill, Rainford, Ingram, Proctor, Kamish, Moffat, Sutton, DeLeon, Aaron Taylor-Smith in the Toyota up there, behind me, Osborne, Morgan, Smiley, Patterson, Robo and Shedden.
New engine though for Aaron Taylor-Smith. So, you know, that's clearly what it was. Absolutely. Okay, moving on to race two then, and Tom Chilton would start at the back of the grid as he was disqualified from race one for overboost violations. The fact that they didn't have the engine mapped correctly and it was running too much boost.
Yeah, I've always wondered how they got into that situation.
Yeah,
and I'm not sure it mattered too much because he didn't even finish in the top 15.
No, I don't know. I don't really know how that happens. It's happened quite a few times this season. I think both Shedden and Moffat have fallen foul of this.
Yep.
I don't really know how it happens, because surely you just send the engine out mapped like you have done the rest of the season. I don't fully...
There will be different maps that the cars run in different specifications.
But surely you must know what that thing gives boost-wise, or you test it before it goes out. I don't understand it, but then I'm not a mechanic.
Or a program.
No, I'm a record archiver, so, you know. Slightly different skill. So, yes, he would start at the back of the grid, and only the front two were on medium, which was
Hill
and Rainford. Obviously, Ingram was on medium in race one, so therefore was able to run softs in this one, which pretty much guaranteed from the start that he would be winning the race. Halstead had to start from the pits, unsure as to why. I do think that's probably linked to race one. I'd say I think the car died when he got spun round. Maybe an electrical gremlin,
possibly.
A fuse knocked out or something. I don't know. BMW did get away very, very well, and Proctor in particular was slow off the line, which was a bit of a surprise. And I would maybe say if there's been any criticism of Proctor this year, and it's hard to criticise him because he's had a very good year since he's come in, his starts have been a little bit poor. We saw it at Croft, we've seen it a couple of other times, that he's not fantastic at getting off the line.
Yep.
And actually, if I think back, I do think that was a little bit of a problem of his when he was back in the Civic as well, in the BTC team, but that's something for him to work on for next season for sure. Ingram was into second at the hairpin first time round, and then by the next lap he was at the hairpin again, rinsing and repeating his move this time on Hill. So pretty much after two laps, or end of two laps, into the lead, and that was that. That's the race done.
I was going to say there are only a couple of overtaking opportunities at Knock Hill, and he certainly makes the most of them down into that hairpin, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. Kamish was trying to keep up the charge and would go through into third again at the hairpin. And also, we said about Chilton not really making any progress in race one. By lap five, he was up to eighth.
It was ridiculous. It almost felt like they put the extra boost in for this race.
Yeah, absolutely. Rainford would then do the good thing for the team and let Moffat through. Of course, it was on the better tyre. We then saw the first real sort of off of the weekend. Osborne seemingly forgetting where his brake pedal was, going off at speed, was driver error, and he did choose to pit to clear the car of dust, gravel and dirt that had clogged up his front.
Lucky that that didn't dig in and get stuck in that gravel track.
De Leon obviously hadn't had much of a chat with Dick Bennett after race one, because this time he was giving Moffat hell for a couple of laps. The two of them were side by side door banging, which, look, it's great to see. It is great to see.
I think this one was all fair as well.
It was all fair, and it is great to see. But on the flip side, if you're Dick and you're in the pit thinking, there's not many tracks have been competitive at this year.
You're watching through your fingers.
Yeah, you're going, lads, it's not been the best of year. If you two take each other out, then I am going to be livid. But you're right, it did all end up fair in the end. But it's interesting, De Leon's been a very... it's not a criticism of him, but he's a very bolshy racer, isn't he? He's of certain of the hard, you know, line racer style.
I was going to say, sometimes, and we saw drivers like Sutton be like that in the early stages of his touring car career, and I think he's got to learn that side of it, definitely, but he will need to temper that at stages, especially if he becomes the driver we all hope he will be.
Absolutely. Cameron should then get past Hill after Hill lost the rear end of the car coming out of the complex.
It's a full four-wheel slide,
A full four-wheel slide. I think, again, that's part and parcel of the BMW. We've seen him do it a couple of times this season. I think that's part and parcel of how the BMW is to drive this year.
And on
the medium tyre as well. Hill would then tumble down the field a little bit off the road. Again, got away with it slightly, but would, say, fall down the field with Proctor and Sutton getting by. It was late, but a good move by Senna at the hairpin on Sutton, sort of cut in late to get past. But
yeah,
a good move. You can't argue that one. Sutton would then get by Proctor hard and fast at the chicane. There's a brilliant little, if you've not seen it, there's a brilliant sort of real clip, if you want to call it, going around the socials today of that move. It is brilliant.
Sutton, he chops back a car. It's so well,
isn't it? He starts on the outside, almost behind Senna, waits for Senna to turn the car in, thinking, okay, I'll keep on the outside, and then just swipes across the back bumper, millimetre perfect.
Floors it and still gets the traction that he needs. I never really understand it.
No, it is a move that he has pulled many times throughout the season, but it is what you would call a trademark Sutton move, and it is absolutely fantastic to watch. Ingram would go on to win by the Proclaimers 500 miles.
He was so far in front.
Yeah, again, and this is basically it for this race. Race two was sort of definitely the slowest of the day.
Yeah, it was.
Napa did swap positions right at the end with Sutton going into second and Kamish pulling wide to let him through.
Yep.
Again, I'll repeat what I said about from the first race. I don't like it. I can understand it. But for Kamish as well, who mathematically is in the title fight, you could argue, realistically is not. And he was, of course, well ahead of Dan Rowbottom, which is basically what he's fighting for now, which is to finish third. So Tom Ingram won the race from Ash Sutton from Dan Kamish. Senna Proctor fourth. Jake Hill, pretty good result on the medium tyre to finish fifth.
Much, much better than Rainford managed to achieve.
Yep. De Leon was sixth. Moffat seventh. Chilton eighth. Great result from him for the back of the grid. Daniel Rowbottom to ninth. Again, didn't really make the progress in this race at all.
And on a soft tyre, although pretty much everyone was.
Yep. Adam Morgan rounded that top 10 with Aaron Taylor-Smith, Chris Smiley, Gordon Sheddon, James Dorlin and Daniel Lloyd making up the points paying positions. You say Rainford dropped all the way out of the points, which I don't think that was purely tyre. I do think there's potentially some damage to the car or setup, only because you compare it to exactly the same car that's managed to finish fifth.
Yep.
So I don't think that's purely tyre offset, personally.
We'll ask him about it.
We can. Right. On Osborne and Howson and Hamilton, I don't think finished. But anyway. Then we got the reverse grid. The first one for Nikki Shields, who I thought did a wonderful job this weekend.
Despite the spider.
Yeah, I think she fitted in really, really well. And I think, there's a big loafer to fill from Steve. But
she's certainly got Cooper, Paul O'Neill and Tim Harvey in their place, hasn't she?
Absolutely. But I thought she had a wonderful opening weekend and long may that continue. But of course, she had the pleasure of Tom Ingram pulling the balls from the jar. And I was correct. I called. I said, if I sat there, it'd be number six. And it was number six.
To be fair to you, you did.
Do I get a point for that?
Tom Chilton wasn't particularly happy as he wanted it to be ball eight. But with a much fairer system that we have this year, it was ball six.
It was ball six.
And we will bring you race three next.
Would you believe it? It's 2025 and people are still missing out on content because they're not doing the basics, Sam. What are the basics?
Yeah, we know there are plenty of you out there that aren't subscribed yet. So get that subscribe button on down below if you're on YouTube or on any podcast platform that you listen on. We're also on social media as well, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. Go and follow us on there. We have plenty of discussions of any breaking news that we have across the season, as well as our updates from each weekend and a preview to what action you might have.
And as a final warning, guys, he likes stats. He sits and analyzes them. He has that dashboard up all the time. So he knows you're out there and he will find you.
Yes, and thank you for all the support so far. We really appreciate it. Get more comments down below.
So, race three then.
Race three, yes. As you say, ball six was pulled, which put De Leon onto pole, didn't it?
It did.
However, on mediums.
Yes.
Yeah, which probably was a sign of how much he struggled during race one, obviously with the grass and the radiator, put him down the field and not having got that medium tyre out of the way.
It did put Jake Hill into second, who had a soft tyre, yes, though, so it was pretty much...
Yeah, so there were four drivers for race three on the mediums. That was De Leon, Proctor, Osborne and Patterson. And to be fair, it was a fairly equal start, mm-hmm, at the front. We don't see too much difference in the tyres off the start line.
I think it helps that the BMW can offset that with the, yes, rear wheel drive anyway, yeah, which definitely, again, ties into, I'm surprised they didn't run at least one in race one that way, but there we go.
Again, and I don't know whether this was down to the tyre, Proctor managed to lose a position off the start.
Again, not a great starter though either, is he? So.
No. And Buxton in the fourth Toyota was slow on lap one and came into the pits at the end of that lap, which puts my predictions in tatters.
I was particularly pleased about that. Sorry, Buxton, because you had managed to absolutely scam your way into three of them scoring points in race two.
Well, I hadn't scammed my way into it. They finished there on merit.
And as such, I was slightly worried that Buxton might pick up just a point somewhere in race three. So from a personal point of view, I was very pleased,
yes,
to see this.
And it turned around even more for you towards the end of
it
this
indeed.
Race.
Indeed. I scammed my way into, yes, something.
Hill and Camish managed to get past De Leon on lap two. And once those two were out front, they pretty much escaped off into the distance.
They did. But again, can I just... let me be negative. It's not about tyres this week. And it's not a full soapbox. But... Camish, man, every time the chase on, I can't remember the last time he chased somebody down for a win. And the car might not be as good as they think it should be, but this BMW's been poor all season. Yeah. It's had a good weekend here and had a good weekend at Brands.
A BMW track.
It was, but he never made any headroom into it. It's not even like he got within a second or two and you think, he's at least, you know, I don't know. I can't remember that. And I remember this a few times before. I remember at Snetterton when we had that race, yep, in the rain. He made no impact into the lead. So I just can't remember the last time he's effectively chased down a lead.
That's probably why he's sitting where he is in the championship. He's had good results throughout the season, but it's that little step further that he probably needs that we probably saw when he had that Civic underneath him and raced extremely well. Proctor then got through on the Leon, I think, a lap later, which was quite significant because they were both on the medium tyre. It suggested that De Leon had possibly lost some pace in that car. Maybe it was suffering from the engine being slightly overheated in race one. And soon, towards the end of the race, went no further. And then we had Sutton versus Ingram in this race.
Yeah.
And a battle for many laps.
Well, it wasn't just them, was it? We'd also have further back Robot and Chilton, who were desperate to stop the other one from getting through to potentially help their teammate. Yeah, it was a really good... Look, we've said before about you need to have a good teammate to win this championship, mm-hmm, generally speaking. We saw it last year with Turkington, Hill.
Yep.
Don't need to keep revisiting that ground. But this year, we've really got it now because, yeah, Ingram has got Chilton, who is generally there.
Yes.
Proctor, who has been there since he came in.
And if it's not Chilton, it's normally Morgan.
Yeah,
one of those two
always steps up.
Do well.
And this year for Ash, both Dans are, yes, there. A Rowbottom's transformation has been nothing,
definitely,
short of, you know, miraculous. And they're both there more often than not now as well.
Yeah, Ingram was looking faster at this point, mm-hmm, I must say. And in general, I think the Hyundai had a little bit more pace than the Ford this weekend.
I agree. But I think Ingram was happy to settle rather than...
He wasn't going to push it as far as he pushed it in race three at Croft, was he?
No, and I think also he was... Yeah, he'd already got the win. I think he knew that Sutton wasn't winning this race, yep, the way it was playing, yep, out, and the way the BMW was performing with Hill. So I think he probably thought, do you know what? It's not worth a non-finish here. Just let him have it.
Agreed. Robarton managed to get past Moffitt for eighth, and then Moffitt had a nice little battle with Adam Morgan. Consequently, his rear bumper was removed completely.
Yeah, I was slightly nervous because I had Moffitt to be the best performing Scotsman, and he had been for quite...
He'd done very well this weekend.
But Shedden wasn't so far back that he couldn't nick it right at the last. When I saw the bumper hanging off, I thought, oh, God, here you go, the meatball flag. But Morgan did the gentleman thing, which was just swipe it off for him at the next
turn. Just run into him again.
Yeah. The Morgan special.
And then Aaron Taylor Smith's weekend came to a sorry end when he had to enter the pits fairly early into race three.
Yeah.
Another engine, maybe.
Reliability at Toyota, it's not the first time, is it? And the reliability at Toyota has been really disappointing this year, particularly from a manufacturer-backed team as well.
I think you'd accept more poor reliability if your engine was super quick or maybe. And you might bring in that little bit of fragility. But to have both a poor engine and poor reliability really just compounds itself.
Agreed. The car was better this weekend. It definitely has improved. But I do think for a manufactured team, their reliability is really, really worrying.
Agreed. De Leon and Proctor, both on the mediums, remember, were starting to drop back into the clutches of that Sutton and Ingram battle. Now, I don't know whether this was because Sutton and Ingram were pushing on and going relatively quickly on that soft tyre, whether the mediums were holding those two back, or whether this was a more tactical battle almost from Proctor holding everyone up so he could help out Ash Sutton. Robarton managed to get past Chilton as well in the rest of his battles with the Hyundais this weekend. He seemed to be battling them for the whole weekend. And then Sutton managed to get past De Leon. And this was while Robarton was really interfering with the back of Ingram and making Ingram thinking about defending and stuff like that. This is the sort of battles that I think we're going to see all the way to the end of the season.
Completely agree.
Where you're going to have your teammate around you to make that other driver think. And then you're going to have your other teammate in there to also make that teammate have to think. Yeah, it's going to get complicated and there's going to be an accident at some point.
There is going to be one of the teammates is going to fire off one of the title contenders, and it's going to create the meltdown of all meltdowns on social media.
It is.
And why is it going to be Proctor? just calling it now.
Oh dear. And then Sutton managed to get past Proctor quite easily. Didn't put up much of a fight. I don't think he could.
Not on the tyre. No.
Meanwhile, Ingram was getting past De Leon, who had fallen back, and then Proctor allowed him through as well. Yeah. Reiterating back to Sutton versus Ingram towards the end of the race, which would then get further swapped. De Leon was now getting shuffled back, obviously on mediums, and Proctor gained a 10-second penalty for track limits, which pretty much put his race to the end.
Second weekend in the row, didn't he get one at Croft? He did. Mm-hmm. He did, because it got Lloyd into the points, didn't it?
Yeah. So De Leon was dropping back through the field, and we wondered what was happening on the timing tower, and then we saw his car on the pit entry. Didn't quite make it in up that hill.
Second.
And I do wonder whether this is as a result of the engine finally giving up the ghost.
Second weekend in a row where he has had on course to win the Jack Series, having backed him to do it for the weekend. And the second weekend in a row in race three, it has just fallen to pieces for him.
And it was literally two laps from the end.
It was.
And the yellow flags came up. There will be yellow flags in that area for the marshals to be able to push the car back up into the pit entry. The race was allowed to finish under that yellow flag condition. With De Leon dropping back, this promoted Mikey Doble, PMR, with Cooper this weekend. If you've missed our review, go back and listen to it. You'll get all the update on what's happened with them. But they managed to score a single point this weekend, which, considering all they've been through...
That's a victory.
...is a brilliant achievement.
Yeah, that's a victory. Yeah. That's a victory. Had to learn a brand new, whole new car. Yeah. A car that, as we said in the preview, hasn't set the series on fire, if we're being honest, unless Bobby Not Thompson's involved. So yeah, a fantastic point for them. And crucial for Doble in terms of the independence that he finished all three races, which is crucial for the independent.
Definitely. And then we had the final bit of controversy for the weekend.
It's not controversial, it's the right call.
Which was Kamish again letting Sutton through just before the line. However, this was still under double yellow flags at the time, mm-hmm. and I think it was quite clearly in the double yellow flag zone, yeah. which the officials have agreed with and actually swapped the positions back post-race.
And given Sutton 3 penalty points on his licence. Now, I have to say, again, in mitigation, because I like to do a bit of mitigation, you would argue, if you're Napa, that they were past the incident and the next board would have been green. However, that's ifs, buts, and maybes. The move took place on the part of the circuit where it was, you know, as you say, the erds were out and it was neutralised. And I'm a Sutton fan. That's been clear on the podcast over the years. But I cannot get on my high horse about drivers ignoring flags and then ignore this. You cannot ignore the flags. It's poor.
My massive argument against that is the fact that they could have done it down the back straight into the hairpin. And that would have taken it completely out of...
I don't think they could, only because Carriage was too far ahead. It really... I mean, he could have completely dropped the car. Yeah, they could have done. Could have, would have, should have. And I can't just sort of give Sutton a pass because he's one of the drivers that I tend to like watching. It's poor. Yeah. As I say, it's dangerous.
I think it's poor from the team as well, because obviously they would have arranged that in that point, unless Carriage has been really sneaky here and gone, I'll do it under yellow flags.
I don't think he's done it like that. No. I don't think he's like that.
Possible.
And also, I think for Sutton, to give him a little bit of defence, is that it's not really his decisions in some ways. Carriage has slowed down. He's got to go past him. Otherwise, he'll slow down, go past him, and Ingram goes past them both. Okay, it would have been reversed under the yellow flag. But yeah, Sutton has done what you would expect anybody to do in that circumstance. Yes. I blame the team more for... Yeah. Not realizing,
trying to orchestrate it at that point.
Yeah, and the yellows have been out for a while. That's not, and on the pit straight where they all sit. Yes. So it's not like it's an obscure part of the track you can't see. So yeah, I'm going to put it more on the team, but I will say, as I say, I get angry about this sort of thing. I've got to be consistent. You can't be ignoring flags. Why can't drivers and teams and motorsport people in motorsport respect the flags?
It doesn't look at their dash. Right, race result anyway from race three. Hill won from on amended, Camish from Sutton, Ingram in fourth, Chilton fifth, Rowbottom sixth, Morgan seventh, Rainford eighth, Moffitt ninth, Shedden tenth, followed by Smiley, Lloyd, Proctor after his 10-second penalty dropped all the way down to 13th, mm-hmm. Patterson, and then, as I mentioned, Mikey Doble getting into the points.
So what this means for the three main championships is that Ingram remains top. He has 323 points. Sutton remains second on 306. That gap is widening. Then it is Camish, who's taken third spot on 228. Rowbottom on 214, so 14 points back in fourth. Hill, 197. Morgan in sixth on 170. Chilton, 1 point behind him on 169. Rainford in eighth on 134. Proctor, who let's not forget only came in partway through the season, is ninth on 116. And I think he finishes high as sixth. I'm putting it out there now. And Smiley is also on 116 and is in 10th. In the Jack Sears, De Leon leads that by a single point now over Charles Rainford, 309 to 308. Osborne is there or thereabouts on 277, but after that, I think it's between those three and arguably two.
Yep.
Dorlin is fourth. Good effort of him in his debut season on 247. Patterson on 227. Nick Hamilton on 144. Halstead on 94. And Buxton on 55. I've discounted drivers that are no longer racing in the championship this year. So Pearson is higher up in the table, but won't be scoring any more points. And then finally, in the independents, Chris Smiley now leads that on 290. Mikey Doble on 277. Lloyd on 265. Patterson on 235. Cook has dropped down to fifth on 206. Obviously, he's missed the last six races.
Yep.
Stephen Jelly, I'm not sure his future holds, but he's on 162. Nick Hamilton on 151. Nick Halstead on 109. And Max Hall on 80. So, Hamilton, not only ahead of Halstead, far ahead of Halstead.
Yes, definitely. The winning Jack Sears driver from this weekend, as we've already mentioned, was Rainford, and the winning independent was Chris Smiley.
Right, let's get into... Do you want to do predictions first or awards first?
Let's do awards first.
Awards first, okay.
Yeah, so I think we've probably gone for the same driver of the weekend. I think it has to be Hill.
Yeah, I agree. It's a front row star. Oh, sorry, he was third technically, but okay, he qualified well. Won two races and then finished in a good position on the worst tie available this weekend. So
I don't forget the illness that he has had and to come back from that.
Yeah, absolutely. So
and also he's done very well this weekend, and he seems to love Knock Hill.
And he punted Nick Houses off, which was just funny. It's just, regardless of your thoughts on it, it's just funny.
Your villain. I found this tricky this weekend.
I've not found it tricky particularly. I've gone for Rowbottom. I think also only because also if you look at his social media as well, it's a weekend of what could have been qualified. Well, it's not his fault the car's underweight necessarily, but okay, he's underweight and that's thrown away any chance of progression in race one. He then doesn't really progress as much as you think he should, arguably. I know, given mitigation throughout the pod to why that is.
Yep.
But dare I say, from being disqualified from the qualifying, he never really recovered it this weekend. Didn't really get close to, and this is a driver that has been top six, knocking on the door of podiums pretty much every weekend, and he was nowhere near that this weekend.
Yeah, okay.
And I think from car potential to performance, I think he knows a lot's been left on the table.
I think you're going to argue with mine.
If you go Moffat, I'm punching through the wall.
I am going for Osborne.
I'm not going to argue. I think
he was looking very racy in race one on that soft tyre, and he had the tyre differential with the drivers around him. But I don't think he made the absolute most of it that he could. And when he got past drivers, he wasn't then going off from that battle pack that he was in. He was still getting dragged back into it.
Yeah, I think you can make the same arguments I've made for Rowbottom, that with Osborne, he didn't potentially get the best out of package this weekend. I think that's a fair comment.
And then in race three, didn't finish inside the points. And that those sorts of finishes are going to really hamper his Jack Sears tilt. And that I went for him this weekend and he didn't come anywhere near.
No, that's fair enough. No, I can understand that.
Surprise good.
I've seen who you've gone for, who was what I was originally going to go for, so I should change it.
Okay.
And I'm going to say, and you're going to look at me oddly, Toyota weren't anywhere near as bad as I thought they were going to be. Three out of the four scored points. Two of the four scored points more than once. So they are better than I thought they were going to be, which I suppose makes it a surprise good. I would have gone for what you've gone for a bit of variety, I should go Toyota. Okay. But that is very much my second choice of what I would have picked.
Right. So I have gone for BMW. I was not expecting BMW to be this good this weekend. We know it's a rear-wheel drive circuit, but with the struggles that they've had, we know that Croft is meant to be a rear-wheel drive circuit, and they didn't perform as well as I thought they should have done. Yes, De Leon had a decent run, unlucky to get into the accident in race three in Croft. But yeah, they did really well this weekend. I know Hill loves this place.
Yeah.
But he made the absolute most of it that he could as well.
No, I completely agree. And all four drivers scored good points. I think Moffat would be slightly disappointed not to have got more from the weekend compared to what his teammates were able to achieve. But look, it's been a tough year for BMW, and if they can take anything from this throughout for the final few rounds of the season, then they could finish on a high.
Yeah. Bad?
Restart. Nowhere this weekend. I was slightly surprised. I was going to say Hyundai across the board, but England did win a race. Mm. They weren't as good here as I thought they were going to be. On a track where I thought their engine would have a real advantage over the rest of the field, Chilton really struggled in race one. Okay, great in race two. Fine. Morgan was there or thereabouts, but never troubling anything.
Yep.
But then Proctor had quite a good weekend on the flip side of that. So I'm going to go for a restart on the basis that Lloyd and Smiley were just anonymous this weekend. Did you notice they were there?
No, they were very much in the bottom of that points battle.
Yeah.
And were sometimes struggling to stay in it. So I can understand why you've gone for them. This is going to confuse you, I think.
If you go PMR.
I've gone for De Leon.
Okay.
A poor move in race one puts grass in the radiator when ideally the three of them should have been top three finish.
I would argue not poor, I'd argue miscalculated, because I think any race driver goes for a gap.
But had consequences.
Yes.
Were misjudged. Yes. Let's say.
Yes, no, I agree with you on that.
Drop down the field in race one, not great. Should have been finishing really top three with the pace of BMW.
It should have been 1-2-3 for BMW.
In race two, don't think he did particularly well. I thought he could have done a little bit better. Obviously, the non-finish in race three may have well been down to the issues in race one caused by overheating.
I'd be surprised if it wasn't.
So, considering the weekend that BMW have had as a whole and the performances that we've seen from Rainford, from Hill, obviously, and the consistency of Moffitt being inside the top 10 for every single race, De Leon has let me down a little bit this weekend, and he's let you down with not winning the Jack Sears.
I'm surprised that's made it bad and cute. I'm really surprised he's not your driver of the day for that. But yeah, no, I can understand it. I don't fully agree, but that's what these personal opinions are all about.
Yep.
Cool. Right. Do you want a penalty corner, or did you not want a penalty corner this week? It's not. I think I've covered it in the thing. Yeah, to be honest,
we've covered it. Covered the penalties.
So let's quickly cross the predictions. Neither of us got pole. I went for Camish. You went for Rowbottom. You were closer, but no cigar.
Well, sort of until he got excluded.
Well, okay, yeah, on the road. In terms of winners, I got two. So I had Ingram and Hill. I also went for Morgan, who was nowhere near. Nope. You went for Rowbottom, Sutton and Hill. So 1 point to you for Hill. So that's 2-1 to me. And I went for De Leon and the Jack Sears, who once again had it in control until the last little bit. And you went for Osborne, which I did at the time I said was bold. And
I said I'd go for someone different, but I should have stuck with Rangers.
Yeah, so at the time I said it was bold, and I was correct to say so. Then we go on to the general predictions. And again, I've done well here. We'll get you out of the way first, because you got nothing right this weekend. So you went for a Scott on the podium. I mean, John Kellen did technically...
It was bold.
Yeah, I mean, John Kellen did give an award out technically, so... Yes. But no. All 4-2 to score points. I will say you were slightly unlucky of that one.
Buxton, in hindsight, didn't really look like he was going to be scoring this weekend.
No.
But, yeah.
This one you are slightly unlucky with as well,
yeah,
I have to say.
Yeah, I am.
So you went for Camish and Rowbottom to outscore Chilton, Morgan and Proctor.
Had a very good weekend.
He did. So they scored 68 combined, the three Virtue drivers. Camish and Rowbottom scored 62, because I've worked it out on...
Yep.
On the road, it's been switched back. So you were only 7 points off that, effectively. So
close.
That is unfortunate.
Yeah.
I grant you that. But it is anyway.
I was egging Rowbottom to get past Chilton and Morgan in that final race, wasn't I?
But there is a lot of unfortunate things that happen on this podcast, yeah, so that's another one. And you...
Cuts for one.
Yes. And you disgracefully refused to back PMR.
And to be fair, with two laps to go, that was coming in.
It was, yeah.
You've got very lucky with that.
But
one.
You said no, PMR would not score points, so you got nothing there. In terms of me, I went for three different Jack Sears winners, and going into race three, that was a real possibility. De Leon had won one, Rainford had won one.
Yep.
And then Rainford just drove too well, damn it. And, I'd kind of hoped that we might see a Patterson or an Osborne come to play, but no.
Yeah, I mean, he did drop down, but the next best was Patterson in 14th.
Yeah. So... Perfect on that one. I did go for Moffat to be the best performing Scotsman. I've not worked out the points, but it's clear that it was comfortably won. And I went for a non-points finish for one of the top two, which didn't happen. Came close at times, but not quite enough.
Yeah.
If only, actually...
Considering that I'd also gone for that as well, first of all.
I take it back. They should have disqualified Sutton for passing under the yellows. That would have been fantastic. And I also went for PMR to get points, which, look...
It's great.
Disgrace, and I suppose
skinny your teeth.
I'm glad you're not arguing that it says points there, not point. But yes, they got a points finish. Yeah. So that does look. To be fair, we needed that from the championship point of view.
You did.
Well, we did.
You did.
We did for the fan enjoyment of this, Sam. That takes you to 20 points.
It does.
And it brings it back to 18. So with three rounds to go, it's three rounds to go.
Pulled it back, haven't you?
Yeah, it's going to be a good finish to the season, I reckon. So
always is.
Do you have any final thoughts then from the Knock Hill weekend? It's a difficult one to really put into perspective for the championship.
We had sunshine.
We did.
We had consistent sunshine at Knock Hill, and there was no sign of rain at all, which I think sort of like changed up the racing that we got. Yes, we normally get excitement through different changeable conditions and stuff like that, but I think we had some really good close racing this weekend due to that smaller offset in the tyre.
Who knew?
And with drivers in the midfield, certainly, battling back and forth between each other.
Absolutely. For me, it's difficult to know what impact this has had on the championship, only because, a rarity, it didn't see Sutton and Ingram at the front.
Obviously,
I know Ingram won a race, but other than that, they weren't really competing at the front. Is this a false dawn for BMW, or are they going to be in the mix the rest of the season? We're going to tracks where I think they should be strong. I think
should be stronger.
Donington is a track where they will be half strong. Half the lap is rear-wheel drive.
Hyundai were very strong early in the season here.
Ford are good there as well.
And I think they will be difficult to beat next time out.
I think BMW should also go well at Silverstone and Brands as well.
Yes.
So...
Loves Brands.
Are they back to stay? We'll have to see. But yeah, I think that Ingram is just starting to spread his wings a little bit at the top of that championship now. And I think it's going to be tough. I'm not saying it's not going to happen before people shout at me. But I think from here, it's going to be hard for Sutton now to... It looks small on paper, but the way that car is, the way Ingram is, and the way that, you know, they are finishing so close to each other throughout the races, it's going to be a tough ask for Sutton from here for me.
Yeah, my final thought is all credit to PMR. From the situation they were in at the start of the week to where they were by Sunday evening, all with a beer in hand, celebrating the point that they got, is a brilliant achievement for them.
Absolutely.
And we wish them all the best going forward for the rest of the season. And we hope that BTCC community will keep coming together to help them finish off the season and help Weaver rebuild PMR.
Absolutely. And hopefully now they can take the data from the Cooperers and make them a little bit more competitive for the remaining rounds of the season. But to even, you know, be on the pace in a car you've never driven with very limited data is incredible. So yeah, the effort those boys and girls have put in is nothing short of miraculous. So as you say, I can only echo your congratulations and good wishes to them.
Yeah, until next time, we'll be back for Donington Park next time out, a preview for that, and we're hopefully going to have a special video lined up after that round.
But keep still on that for now. We are going to Donington Park. We will see some of you there, but of course before that we will have our full preview as always. Until we speak again,
bye bye. Under yellows,
yeah, I agree,
because there are marshals on track and it was double wave yellows, so you have to prepare to stop.
Yeah. I agree. I'm not going to defend him. Always say respect the flags. I'm not about to defend him. The only thing I will say that would have been used in mitigation was they were past the, and I know it doesn't matter, but they were past the instant and the next flag would have been green, but should have, would have, could have. No, I agree.
Still in the zone, isn't it?
So. I agree. But I also think that the people on Facebook go, yeah, I should be disqualified, is also just all utter nonsense. But yeah. You got a spider on you.
Yeah.
It was a joke from the.
Oh, sorry.
There you go. It's been a good day for you.